The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Hello, I'd like to deposit this to checking.
Fate is a fickle master.
What?
The future is uncertain.
Okay, and what's my account balance?
Ah, the horizon is cloudy. I see a long, treacherous voyage filled with great peril.
Look, can I just get a deposit slip or something?
A fortune bank teller. Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to GEICO.
I see a yellow-eyed serpent.
What?
And a low APR.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. A top Trump administration official leaves. Who else is next?
The White House bracing for another staff shakeup?
Students walk out and step up to demand safer schools.
We're coming through this together.
Democrats claim victory in Pennsylvania.
We celebrate regaining our voice and our vote.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's get started this weekend at the White House. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy is there, where it's again musical chairs in the Trump administration that began with the firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Stephen, why did the president decide to replace him?
Well, the president felt that he just didn't see eye to eye with Rex Tillerson on a number of different issues. And the president told us on Tuesday that he found himself disagreeing with his Secretary of State on the Iran deal. Obviously, there was the issue about whether the U.S. should engage directly with Kim Jong-un, which the president actually now is interested in doing. And the president also said that he's getting very close to having the cabinet and other things that he wants. So the whole rest of this past week, there was rampant speculation here in Washington about what else the president wants.
So CIA Director Mike Pompeo is nominated now by the president to replace Tillerson, and Deputy CIA Director Gina Haspel is nominated to replace Pompeo. Other cabinet secretaries, they've been under public scrutiny as well. Are their futures in jeopardy?
The Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Ben Carson, has faced a great deal of scrutiny over the furniture order that was placed for his office of something like $31,000. There's the Veterans Affairs Secretary who took a trip to Europe with his wife, a 10-day sightseeing tour that he later reimbursed the government for because the government initially paid for his wife to come too. And look, there are a number of questions here that are being asked about even the attorney general, whether Jeff Sessions' job is safe. The press secretary, Sarah Sanders, told reporters on Friday afternoon that there are no personnel announcements. But I will tell you, Steve, that anything can happen. And what is certainly still the case, even as the White House denies that the president, according to our sources, remains intent on making changes.
Let's also talk about the Russia probe. There was one key development by special counsel Robert Mueller that we've now learned about.
Well, we learned this week, it was reported in the New York Times, that Robert Mueller, the special counsel, has subpoenaed the Trump Organization for what we don't know precisely. But it is said to be the first time that Robert Mueller has actually sought a court order to obtain documents or information from the president's personal business. The president gave an interview to the New York Times last summer in which he said that it would be crossing a red line for the special counsel to be digging into his family or personal finances. So that's why it's raised a lot of eyebrows here.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet, Steve.
Let's turn to school safety now, with the White House creating a commission to examine ways to prevent school shootings as part of its strategy in response to the Parkland massacre. But critics say it's not enough, and students across the country walked out of classes Wednesday demanding action. Correspondent Adriana Diaz is at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School with more.
A sea of students streamed out of the school behind a national movement. Parents at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School cheered them on, like Rick and Rosemary Jensen.
I'm so glad the kids have found their voices.
Freshmen Alexa Palin and Brianna Jesenkowski hugged by a memorial for their friend, 14-year-old Gina Montalto.
Does a walkout like what you guys are doing, do you think it helps?
It does help because it shows that the community is so strong and that we're coming through this together.
But the father of 14-year-old victim, Elena Petty, wants a different approach. On Twitter, Ryan Petty encouraged students to walk up to the kid who causes disturbances in class and ask how he's doing, adding the hashtag, walk up, not out. Still in Portland, Oregon, students who walked out formed a clear message. And even snow and frigid temperatures in Akron, Ohio, didn't stop the youngest students determined to show their support.
This is what democracy looks like.
In nearby Chicago, nearly 1,000 students left Jones College Prep. But they say the rest of America is now grappling with the gun violence they've battled for years.
They don't live in cities or communities where guns play constantly, where children are dying 24/7 in the streets, no matter if they're coming to or from school.
In Washington, D.C.,
if you can speak, speak. If you can march, march.
Young people wanted their voices heard. Kate Whitman organized her school walkout in New York City.
We saw this in the 60s and the 70s with MLK, with the Vietnam protests, and we're seeing this here right now. This is a part of history.
While the walkout was underway, the NRA tweeted, "Let's work together to secure our schools and stop school violence. We protect our banks, our sports stadiums, and our government buildings better than we protect our schools." The NRA wants Congress to push through legislation that increases school safety. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Parkland, Florida.
The lawyer for adult film star Stormy Daniels has given CBS News a copy of a new court document that may reveal that an attorney with ties to the Trump Organization, helped by efforts from President Trump's personal lawyer Michael Cohen, by her silence after an affair she alleges she had with Mr. Trump before he became president. Here's correspondent Chip Reed.
The Trump Organization has said in a statement that Martin was working in an individual capacity and the company has no involvement in the matter. But the fact that a lawyer for the Trump Organization is involved raises questions about Cohen's claim that he acted alone to pay Daniels. The White House says President Trump denies having an affair with Daniels at all.
Democrats are claiming credit for a congressional election victory in Pennsylvania.
We did it.
Hours after the polls closed, Pennsylvania Democrat Connor Lamb declared victory at his headquarters.
We're practical people. We're serious people. And tonight, we celebrate regaining our voice and our vote.
The 33-year-old former federal prosecutor and Marine leads by just a few hundred votes over state lawmaker Rick Saccone. The Republican is battling to hold on to a seat that's been in GOP hands for 15 years. Saccone has not conceded the race.
It's not over yet. We're going to fight all the way to the end. You know I never give up.
Whatever the final results here, this election is a bruise for the Republican Party, which spent millions of dollars to support its candidate.
President Trump won here by 20 points and visited twice to support Saccone. That did not persuade Shannon Haldeman.
I am a Republican. I did vote for Trump, and I didn't see what I wanted to see. I voted for Connor for the honesty and integrity that we needed in District 18.
Saccone supporters say he's a friend to the community and small business owners.
Overall, he's just a great guy, and he's very well respected as a veteran. And the people here just love him.
The district has 7 days to count all remaining ballots, and in a race this close, either side can ask for a recount. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, Pittsburgh.
Still to come, fears the death toll could rise in a Miami pedestrian bridge collapse. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A pedestrian bridge that collapsed at Florida International University in Miami killed 6 people Thursday, but authorities warned the death toll could rise. Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Chief Dave Downey.
We used auditory, we used visual, we used our canines, and we've determined that there's no longer any survivors. That's why we transitioned into this recovery mode.
The NTSB is investigating. Florida Senator Marco Rubio tweeted that cables that suspended the bridge had loosened and were being tightened when it collapsed. Overseas, the U.S. is joining the U.K. and its allies, blaming Russia for a nerve agent attack on a double agent in England. Here's President Trump responding to it Thursday.
I spoke with the Prime Minister, and we are
in deep discussions, a very sad situation. It certainly looks like the Russians were behind it.
Prime Minister Theresa May responded by expelling 23 Russian diplomats, cutting off high-level contacts with Moscow, and vowing to take more action. In retaliation, Russia says it will expel some UK diplomats. Correspondent Charlie Daggett reports it comes after another critic of Putin was mysteriously killed in the UK.
The body of Russian exile Nikolai Glushkov was discovered Monday night and comes less than 2 weeks after Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter were poisoned by a military-grade nerve agent made in Russia. Glushkov was an opponent of Russian President Vladimir Putin and now joins a list of 14 other Russians who have died on British soil, some under mysterious circumstances and whose cases are now being reviewed. Skripal and his daughter Yulia remain in critical condition, as does the first police detective on the scene. Novichok is a particularly lethal nerve agent.
It's an unbelievably cruel and unpleasant way to go.
Toxicologist Andrea Sella says it wouldn't take much.
In terms of the amounts that we're talking about, you're literally talking about a few drops here are sufficient to actually do away with some. The real crucial question is how you deliver it.
Sella said Novichok is made by mixing two relatively harmless compounds together and becomes instantly lethal. It's usually found as a liquid and can be sprayed or swallowed.
We speak of these as weapons of terror. They really are.
Charlie Daggett, CBS News, London.
Putin was on the campaign trail as Russians head to the polls this weekend in the country's presidential election. He's expected to win. It's there. In Crimea, correspondent Liz Palmer reports Putin continues to deny any involvement in the UK poisoning attack as the world shuns Russia.
The Kremlin is pushing back hard against Britain's accusations.
Here in Russia, President Putin's supporters are solidly behind their government, even though they know it means international condemnation.
Even as the Skripal crisis deepened, President Putin did not skip a beat on the campaign trail, coming here to Crimea for the last big rally before the vote.
Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin!
It's a deeply symbolic gesture. Crimea, he told the crowd, has come home to Russia. He's referring to 2014, when Russian soldiers seized the territory from Ukraine. It was a land grab most Russians approved of. The rest of the world declared it illegal. On his tour here, Putin also visited the bridge Russia is building from its mainland to Crimea, literally cementing its claim. The message to the U.S. and the West, Putin is never giving it back. This image of the strong man standing up to a biased, Russia-baiting world goes down well here, and Putin knows it.
Elizabeth Palmer, CBS News, Sevastopol, Crimea.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration is also expanding sanctions against Russia, targeting 19 Russians for allegedly interfering in the 2016 U.S. presidential election and orchestrating cyber attacks around the world. Melvin Goodman is a Russia expert and former CIA analyst.
This is an indication the United States is willing to work with its European allies and an indication that they understand that Putin has gone too far and needs to be challenged and needs to be countered. So this is a very important step.
President Trump continues to push for his massive U.S.-Mexico border wall. He visited prototypes at the border near San Diego Tuesday.
President Donald Trump's first California visit since the election kicked off with a tour of the prototypes of his long-promised border wall. While talking to Border Patrol agents in San Diego, Mr. Trump hinted he liked a particular design.
I mean, we're looking very much at the wall with some see-through capability on the other side.
He reaffirmed his stance on the benefits of building the infrastructure.
Save taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars by reducing crime, drug flow, welfare fraud, and burdens on schools and hospitals.
Immigrants are welcome here.
Mr. Trump's California arrival was met by protesters.
We're hypocrites in this country when we say, knock the Berlin down wall. Now we've created another Berlin wall over here.
Building a border wall continues to be a divisive party line fight. A new CBS News poll shows 77% of Republicans want to build a wall, while 88% of Democrats oppose it.
The president could choose one of the 8 towering models built in Otay Mesa as the final proposal for his southern border wall. And President Trump says Mexico will pick up the $25 billion price tag for the wall one way or another. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, San Diego.
A mystery in Austin after 2 packages exploded.
He collapsed right there.
So about 3 feet in front of his front door.
About 3 feet in front of his front door.
Anthony Stefan House was bleeding from his face, had shrapnel in his chest, and both of his hands were nearly blown off. That's according to his neighbor, Sean Phillips, who was the first to reach him and try to save his life.
Was the victim able to tell you anything?
No. He wasn't even responding to his name. His eyes were open, but he looked glazed over.
House's 8-year-old daughter was inside at the time. He died on March 2nd. 10 days after his death, police received reports of 2 more explosions. The first came at 6:44 a.m. Monday. A teenager was killed when he picked up a package and brought the bomb inside his kitchen. The second call was at 11:50 a.m. A 75-year-old woman was critically injured by a blast that happened on her porch.
This is not something that we have seen happen in our country for quite some time, and it's absolutely nothing that has ever happened in Austin.
Brian Manley, the interim police chief in Austin, says the explosives were disguised as packages left overnight near the victim's front doors.
Did the packages explode when the persons picked them up or as they were walking up to them?
We have had packages that exploded when the victim picked that package up. We have also had one where the victim actually picked the package up, brought it into the residence and opened it up, and it exploded at that point.
The chief says these packages are not being mailed or coming from any official delivery service.
I've not seen anything that gives me reason to believe that this has links to terrorism at this point.
What about a hate crime?
We're keeping our focus as wide as possible.
People have been told if you've got a package on your doorstep that looks suspicious or you're not expecting, call the police. We'll check it out. So far, more than 80 people have called. David Begno, CBS News, at the scene in Austin, Texas.
Up next, a deadly week for aviation on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. It was a deadly week for air travel. Let's start with a helicopter crash into New York's East River that killed 5 people, just the pilot surviving. WCBS radio reporter Kevin Rincon says investigators are still piecing together what happened.
The helicopter doors were open as it crashed into the East River. The NTSB says the 6 people on board were on a photo flight. Investigators say the pilot was able to reach an emergency flotation device on the helicopter that was meant to keep it upright in the water. But that didn't happen.
All 3 had deployed. Now, one of the things that we will be looking at with those devices is what the sequence of events was. As for the deployment, did they deploy properly?
Todd Gunther is the investigator in charge. He says the helicopter has been moved to a secure location for inspection. Kevin Rincon for CBS News, New York.
2 Navy pilots are dead after their fighter jet crashed near Key West during a training exercise. More from WTKR-TV reporter Anthony Sabella.
We're told both the pilot and the weapons systems officer were able to eject but did not survive. The Navy says the FA-18 Super Hornet was on a training flight making its final approach to Boca Chica Field at Naval Air Station Key West when this crash happened. This plane is part of Strike Fighter Squadron 213, also known as the Black Lions. It's a squadron based out of Naval Air Station Oceana in Virginia Beach. The pilot and the weapons systems officer were about a mile east of the runway at the time of the crash.
The Pentagon also says 7 people aboard a U.S. military helicopter in Iraq died when it crashed Thursday. And authorities in Nepal say they're having trouble identifying survivors of a deadly plane crash in Kathmandu, with many of the injured badly burned, in critical condition, and unable to speak. Correspondent Terry Okita has more on the crash that killed 49 people.
Nepalese emergency crews searched the crash site of the U.S. Bangla Airlines plane, looking for any possible survivors. Rescuers had to cut apart the mangled wreckage to save more than a dozen people. Some were rushed to the hospital with injuries. The twin propeller plane took off from Bangladesh's capital city of Dhaka. Witnesses say the Bombardier Dash 8, which had 71 people on board, swerved, crashed, and burst into flames as it landed at Nepal's Kathmandu airport. This man says there was smoke and explosions, and then it came down. Officials say the plane circled the airport twice as it waited for clearance to land. One witness saw the plane flying so low, she thought it would hit the nearby Himalayan mountains. Several airliners have crashed or had accidents at Kathmandu's airport because of the mountainous terrain. Investigators are factoring that in as they look into what caused this disaster. Terry Okita, CBS News, London.
Meanwhile, United has announced it will issue special bag tags for animal carriers after a French bulldog puppy died when it was forced into an overhead bin. Here's CBS News transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
He was a really special dog, and it's just sad how the way he has to just leave.
For 11-year-old Sofia Ceballos and her mother, Catalina Robeldo, Coquito, a French bulldog puppy, was a part of the family.
We took him everywhere we went.
On the United Airlines flight from Houston to New York's LaGuardia Airport Monday, Robeldo put her dog in this carrier, but struggled to get it under the seat in front of her. The family says a flight attendant insisted the bag and Coquito inside go in the overhead bin.
My mom's like, it's a dog, he can't breathe there. And she's like, it doesn't matter. She felt the dog and she put him up there.
The family says they heard Coquito barking for 2 hours, then he stopped. They wanted to check on him, but say they couldn't.
We tried, but like there was a lot of turbulence and we weren't allowed to stand up.
When the flight was over, they found Coquito had died. A fellow passenger posted, "My heart broke with theirs as I realized he was gone."
My mom was crying. She was like, screaming there, looking at him.
In a statement, United says this was a tragic accident that should never have occurred, as pets should never be placed in the overhead bin. We express our deepest condolences.
There is no circulation at all in there.
Retired airline captain Denny Kelly says the pitch-black overhead bin is dangerous for any live animal.
They're scared. Their heart rate goes up, and they use more oxygen. And if there's not enough oxygen in the first place, that just makes it worse.
The flight attendant apparently told the airline she didn't realize there was a dog in the bag. She's been described as distraught. The American Kennel Club says French bulldogs, because they have a short nose, can have issues breathing, and it can limit the efficiency of the dog's breathing. They're also easily stressed, which can speed up their need to breathe. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Reagan National Airport, Virginia.
United also says a mix-up sent a German Shepherd to Japan instead of Kansas City. Now to the roads in Saudi Arabia, where correspondent Nora O'Donnell met the country's pioneering women about to drive legally there for the first time.
You're responsible for saving people's lives.
Yes.
And you can't drive.
Dr. Ruba Al-Zuhari is studying to become a surgeon. She's also studying for her driver's license.
This will also decrease some of the costs that I'm paying on taxis, on a driver. This will help me be independent.
She's one of the women paving the way at the driving school at Princess Noura University, Saudi Arabia's first driving school for women.
This is a small change, but it's a significant impact on our society.
Starting in June, women above the age of 18 will no longer have to rely on drivers or male relatives to get around.
Sometimes
wearing abayas, traditional garments they wear in public, Saudi women are learning to drive at facilities like this.
You're going to give me a drive? Yeah.
Like the other instructors, Dr. Dima Al-Sakat has a driver's license from living abroad. Hers is from the state of Virginia.
So you've never driven in Saudi Arabia except here at the school? Yeah.
Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman lifted the driving ban in part to boost women's participation in the workforce.
I can't wait. I'm so happy to be part of it.
As the economy diversifies away from oil.
We have two obstacles facing women here in our country, transportation and childcare. And we try from this school to solve these two problems.
Those solutions include a nursery and a traffic village for older children. The lesson that it's normal for girls to drive.
You're establishing a new culture.
Yes, exactly.
Much has changed for Saudi women who are entering new professions and graduating from universities in record numbers. Princess Rima bint Bandar Al Saud is championing women's rights, and she says driving is part of a bigger vision.
To envisage change, you actually have to have a sense of where you'd like to go. Every and any woman will tell you, I want more, and I want it right now. The issue is, right now for me, is tomorrow for somebody else. So how do I make sure we all get to where we need to go together?
Driving is just a quick win. It's not everything. It's progress. The trajectory now is just going forward and not backwards.
You are witnessing history.
Yes.
Yeah, glad to be You're part of it. History.
We're the ones that are going to tell our grandkids yeah. about it.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, millions say goodbye to a piece of their childhood.
Toys R Us has had to struggle under the weight of $5 billion in debt.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Two big companies declared bankruptcy this week. Let's talk with CBS News senior business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Jill, let's start with Toys R Us. What happened?
Oh, poor Jeffrey the Giraffe. Jeffrey the Giraffe, RIP. This is a story of how a big private equity deal has gone sour. And essentially, back in 2005, Toys R Us was purchased by a group of investors, big money investors. And the way that that deal was financed was through borrowed money. And for all these years, Toys R Us has had to struggle under the weight of $5 billion in debt. And they were doing so in a period of time when the industry was changing enormously. So we had online competition from places like Amazon and Walmart and Target. And we also saw shifting tastes among kids who were really going for technology more than physical stores. So essentially what has happened is that this company, which filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy back in September, basically threw in the towel. They said they're going to have to liquidate now, and that's going to amount to nearly 33,000 people losing their jobs in the U.S.
What about all of these empty stores left behind? What fills the void? Do you imagine a successor company coming in and rescuing this sector of the toy industry, or does that just go away forever?
Well, right now it appears that Toys R Us is actually trying to handpick 200 of its high-performing stores and marry that with their Canadian operation, which is doing just fine and is not liquidating, and trying to sell that whole thing off. But you're right, if they don't, we're going to have over 700 locations that are going to be empty. This is going to add to a problem that already exists in retail. We just have too much square footage for the number of people who are shopping in brick-and-mortar locations. What will actually replace that is unknown at this time. We know that mall developers have been complaining about this for a while. You know, you almost see it like, gosh, is it going to just be one huge space of banks and drugstore companies, which seem to be one of the few areas of continued growth in terms of retail space.
Why are we even building new malls at all then?
That's a good question. We don't need more mall space. We have far too much space relative to the number of people who are actually walking through stores. A lot of the retail analysts I speak to really put this as the core problem among retailers, including some of our most beloved department stores, that we just built too much space for not enough business. And again, this is all happening at a time when, of course, we know so much of the growth in retail is occurring online. Now, that said, we also know that places like Amazon are opening up brick-and-mortar outlets with their own bookstores, also with grocery stores and by the purchase of Whole Foods. So, you know, something will fill the void, or they'll knock them down and figure out what else to put there.
Georgetown in D.C. just a few days ago is one of the locations where Amazon opened up one of these brick-and-mortar bookstores that also sell other things. Jill, let's turn now to radio. Many folks are listening right now, of course, on the radio, if not on their phone. iHeart declared bankruptcy. Why is that significant?
Well, iHeart is the largest radio company in the United States. And, you know, they own more than 800 stations. They also own other businesses that are not in bankruptcy, like outdoor advertising or billboards. This is actually a weirdly similar story because in 2008, two private equity firms bought the company, which was formerly known as Clear Channel, and they financed the majority of that purchase with borrowed money. And so right now, iHeartMedia is really trying to operate under $20 billion of debt. And that's really a huge nut to pay every single month. So if you look at it over the last 5 years, iHeart has spent more on repaying debt than it actually earns. Now, I think this story actually could have a happier ending, though, because iHeart is in negotiations with the people that own their bonds, who've lent them money. And this bankruptcy should allow the company to unshackle itself from those loans, and that would give it a fighting chance to compete in an industry that is obviously facing pretty stiff competition.
A changing landscape in radio and in toys. CBS News Senior Business Analyst Jill Schlesinger on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Jill.
Take care.
Fertility clinics are under the microscope after a second problem in a week being reported involving frozen human eggs and embryos.
This time, a San Francisco fertility clinic says thousands of frozen eggs and embryos may have been damaged after a storage tank malfunctioned last week. 400 patients have been informed.
This is incredibly rare.
Fertility doctor Peter Klatsky, small comfort to the couples involved. University hospitals in Ohio now facing a class action lawsuit there after a malfunction that may have damaged about 2,000 frozen eggs and embryos. The lawyers say their clients are devastated. Vicky Barker, CBS News.
The world's Paralympians have gathered in Pyeongchang, South Korea for their time in the shadow of the Olympic cauldron.
Brenna Huckabee had to fight her way back from fourth place in the heats to take gold in snowboard cross.
The first gold medal.
I felt really nauseated all night because it was just so much emotion.
The young mother from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, is used to a challenge.
I have like a running leg and then I have a snowboard leg.
She lost her right leg to bone cancer at age 14. She's also the first ever amputee athlete to pose for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition.
To see, you know, myself out there just showing you, like, you're perfect no matter how you are was, you know, I inspired myself in it. Like, it was incredible.
Weaving in shoots and scores.
On the ice rink, the U.S. sled hockey team is hoping for a third consecutive gold in Pyeongchang.
Shoots and scores.
In a sport that's nothing short of brutal. They say being lower to the ground only makes it more dangerous.
In stand-up hockey, you hit the glass gives. In sled hockey, you hit the boards don't give.
So you can, like, knock yourself out?
No, you're not. You knock someone else.
These team members are all former Marines and lost all or part of both legs while serving their country. Josh Mishevitz was hit by a homemade bomb in Afghanistan in 2011.
The only thing I don't remember is the blast. I woke up, my right leg was gone, left leg was going that way.
He went through months of rehab, postponing his homecoming until he could walk again.
When you first get injured, blown up, you have no idea what to expect. And then you start playing hockey or you're going out doing whatever you want to do, and it's like, oh, I'm normal again, you know?
The truth is, though, they're anything but normal.
The U.S. has another solid victory.
Because they're superb athletes at the very top of their game.
Smooth as silk.
Holly Williams, CBS News, Pyeongchang, Korea.
Coming up, the inspiring life of Stephen Hawking.
His life would have been an inspiration even if he hadn't defied medical science and lived 50 years longer than a person afflicted with ALS is supposed to.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
If you like this podcast, check out what other podcasts are available from CBS News Radio.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt.
Climate's changing. We contribute to it. I've said that 1,000 times, okay?
Chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Tom Perez.
That's what this president has always been about. He divides people.
Samantha Bee, our very special guest.
I think I just realized my voice is really boring on podcasts. I'm sorry, everyone.
Subscribe now for a new podcast every Friday morning. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. This weekend on 48 Hours, correspondent Peter Van Sant talks with a man police say pushed his fiance off a cliff to her death. Peter, what happened?
Well, this is a story that we've been working on for 5 years now, and finally I had the opportunity to interview the suspect in this case, Stephen Nichols, one-on-one without an attorney present. It was a no-holds-barred 2-hour interview that we end up completely refashioning this hour because his story has evolved, and he is now suggesting that his girlfriend and mother of his 9-month-old daughter at the time when Rhonda Casta went off that cliff in Oregon back in 2009, he's now suggesting that this was not an accidental slip. He's always denied that he pushed her. He's now saying basically that she committed suicide, that she took a step and jumped off this cliff, falling 150 feet to her death.
Well, what does Rhonda Casto's family say about that?
They say it's a complete lie, and that that Stephen Nichols is changing history to try to make himself look good, because in the course of this case, over all of these years, this ended up being settled. There was a settlement in this where he pleaded guilty to criminally negligent homicide and coercion, and he ended up not spending any more time in jail in the 14 months he had served awaiting trial. There, the families incensed at all of this. They really wanted this to go to trial, but the prosecutors felt the case just wasn't quite strong enough. But now they feel as though Stephen is trying to rehabilitate himself and using their dead daughter to do that, and they're outraged by it.
You can watch 48 Hours Saturday nights on the CBS Television Network or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
A museum into the mind behind a galaxy far, far away.
A long time ago on planet Earth, a movie called Star Wars inspired generations and made George Lucas one of the most successful filmmakers ever.
Great shot, kid. That was one in a million.
I created it. I lived with it for 40 years.
Good luck. In 2012, Lucas sold the rights to Star Wars to Disney for more than $4 billion. With Star Wars gone, he's been pursuing another passion, the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art.
You can tell we are very happy to be here.
At a groundbreaking in Los Angeles, Lucas and his wife Melody Hobson launched the billion-dollar project. When it opens in 3 years, the streamlined building will seem to hover over a park. It may resemble a Star Wars spaceship, but don't let that fool you.
Everybody calls it a Star Wars museum, but it's not a Star Wars museum, because people aren't going to come to a Star Wars museum. They can go to Madame Tussauds for that.
Movies, including the Star Wars series, will be featured in exhibits showing what it takes to make a film, from set designs to character and costume sketches. There will be film storyboards and comic art. But the museum will also display paintings by Renoir, N.C. Wyeth, Winslow Homer, Maxfield Parrish, Norman Rockwell, all from Lucas's private collection.
I wanted to be an illustrator. I wanted to be able to do that.
Art that tells a story inspired him to tell stories. That narrative art is what Lucas will share in his museum.
It is telling the story of the society, the history of the wars, the history of the heroes, the history of the kings.
Well, Lucas is a storyteller. Hobson is a businesswoman and CBS News financial contributor.
Did you say at some time, George, $1 billion is a lot of money. What's the return on investment in this?
Well, I knew the return on investment was not about profit for us. The return on investment was for society, the money that we have. It is for others. It is not for us to have more.
A gift you had a hard time giving away.
Who knew it'd be hard to give away a museum?
It's a saga that began a decade ago when Lucas first proposed building his museum in San Francisco near the Golden Gate Bridge, but local opponents shut it down.
But then Melody said, well, do it in my city, we'll get it done.
Her city is Chicago, but a lawsuit filed by activists stopped it. Chicago Star Wars fans protested as only they could.
This all stinks like Jar Jar Binks. This all stinks like Jar Jar Binks.
After Chicago did not work out, I did go to George, and I said, George, come on, let's just do something else. Let's give up on this one. And he literally looked at me and he says, I want my museum. I want this. And I said, okay, onward.
Onward to Los Angeles.
And on behalf of this city of angels, I want to thank you two angels for coming here.
What were your instructions to the architect?
Iconic is what we said. We want an iconic building. We want to do something that has never been done before, that has never been seen before.
I want you to have a bigger view of the world. I want you to be able to imagine things that don't exist.
It's a talent that launched his career and built his empire and inspired an entire generation of storytellers along the way. John Blackstone, Skywalker Ranch, California.
Finally this weekend, Stephen Hawking defied science in more ways than one. Correspondent Mark Phillips looks back at Hawking's life.
Understanding how paradox is between quantum mechanics.
The body had been ravaged by disease, but the mind soared into the cosmos. Stephen Hawking had even trained, hoping to get into space.
I could have gone on and on. Space, here I come.
His life would have been an inspiration even if he hadn't defied medical science and lived 50 years longer than a person afflicted with ALS, the muscle-wasting Lou Gehrig's disease, is supposed to. And even if he hadn't, as he once told 60 Minutes, gone scientifically where no man had gone before.
For me, it is quite an achievement. I never thought I would get so far.
His physical limitations had, he said, freed his mind to develop brilliant new theories on the origins of the universe, or on what actually happened in space's black holes. And his ability to explain those theories using his computer-synthesized voice,
that makes us unique in transcending our limits.
And in his unlikely bestseller, A Brief History of Time, made him probably the most famous scientist of his generation. It earned him one of President Obama's first Medals of Freedom.
Professor Stephen Hawking was a brilliant man and a mediocre student.
It's the science that endures, that and his message.
So remember to look up at the stars and not down at your feet.
Mark Phillips, CBS News, London.
Hawking died at age 76. That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show is always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Mitchell Fallon is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.